Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca, Mesut Ozil. Alexis, en el descuento ha marcado el Arsenal, como viene siendo habitual esta temporada. Gol de Alexis, 1-0 Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there and welcome to another Arscast Extra. As always with James from Gunnerblog, good morning.
Good morning.
The big question, I suppose we have to start here. There's no escaping it. We can't ignore it. We're just going to have to like get our heads down and get on with it. How do you get that Taylor Swift song out of your head?
It's really difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think maybe just hitting your head against something for a long period of time.
Yeah, because you certainly can't shake it off. That's the thing.
No, I know. You're stuck with it.
Mm.
Unless you're a cockroach, in which case I think you can survive briefly without a head.
Yeah, and they also don't have ears. Do you know that?
Yeah,
they don't have ears at all, so no.
So they're immune to Taylor Swift.
Absolutely.
In fact, if a sort of Taylor Swift Holocaust occurred, that some people say cockroaches would be the only thing that would survive.
Yeah. Cockroaches and Taylor Swift will be the only things that will survive.
They'd have to start a new civilization together.
Yeah, she would have no domain over them because, A, they can't hear her when she's giving commands, and, B, they kind of operate on different planes, you know. Cockroaches are much more down to earth, basically.
Self-sufficient.
Yeah, they're good. And Taylor Swift needs adulation and applause, and she won't get that.
Not from them.
No.
They're a difficult audience.
Yeah, they are. A tough crowd, people have said.
Indeed.
So.
So that was the Ask Us Extra. Thanks for everyone. Bye.
We'll catch you next week.
Yeah.
Feels a bit like that, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know. How many more of these we've got to do until the end of the season? A lot more.
A lot more. A lot more. And remember, we don't take summer holidays either.
No.
For this, so quite a lot more. We're going to be doing this until we die.
Yeah, just us and the cockroaches. Right, well, let's get into it then.
And
Taylor Swift in the background.
Yeah.
And a lorry, probably. What did you make of that then, at the weekend?
I found it infuriating in some respects, and also just... in other respects, it just felt, what's the word we've used? Inevitable. We've used that word a number of times. But what did my head in, I have to say, was the Wilshire miss. That absolutely drove me mad. And I'm not, you know, I don't normally get overly vexed by results or matches or performances, you know, because I don't think there was any issue with Arsenal in terms of effort or trying hard, you know, the way people will say after a game, oh, they didn't want to win, there was no desire, there was no passion, all these intangibles which are very hard to measure. I never got the sense that we weren't trying our best. So from that point of view, you know, you can't really have any complaints. But the fact that we'd played quite well and worked hard to get ourselves into decent positions to score goals, and we were found wanting there. I thought Welbeck should have done better in the opening stages. I thought Wilshire's miss was the kind of thing that you knew would come back to haunt you.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. And for me, it was just, oh, it was awful. Awful.
What was going through his head, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know why he just didn't open up his body and just put it to the right hand side of De Gea.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know what he was trying to do in terms of the finish, because he made the run was brilliant, the pass was brilliant, the first touch was really good, and then the finish was just abject. And he had Alexis outside him as well. You know, if he'd really wanted to be super tippy-tappy Jack Wilshere, he could have just knocked it with his left foot into the path of Alexis, who would have had a tap-in. And I think that, on that moment, I won't say the game turned, but our chance to make the game turn in our way went missing.
Yeah. It was that classic Wilshere thing, really, almost, of too many touches, I thought. Mm. I thought he could have hit it earlier than he did. And he sort of, you know, I think he was maybe expecting De Gea to make a move to, I don't know, go to ground. And he didn't really. He stood quite big.
He just hit it straight at him.
And then he just ended up hitting it straight at him, which was crazy.
It's driving me mad now, you know. Even now.
You know, it was a very different one. But at Chelsea, there was an opportunity for Wilshere as well, where he took that heavy touch.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
So he's had a couple of chances in big games that he's not been able to...
Even that moment in the second half, just before their goal, where he got injured...
Earlier there.
Yeah, but a heavy first touch meant that he overcooked the ball and allowed them to get in. I thought that was a nasty foul, and I thought we should have had a free kick on the edge of the box. But the fact is, we had 4-on-3 for a moment, and if he'd made the right pass at the right time, then we had another good goal scoring chance. And then what happens, of course, is that they get the goal. What do you make of the goal? Their goal.
Well, look, I think it's a foul. I suppose the first thing to say. I know that he's possibly marginally offside Fellaini, but I'm kind of the mind that, you know, the advantage is supposed to be with the attacker, and I generally would want to see that, you know, both ways. But I think he definitely pushes Gibbs into Szczesny.
Mm.
And that went unpunished. I mean, after that, I guess it's, you know, Gibbs diverts it into his own net. It's a little bit unfortunate. Could Szczesny have done better? I don't know. He's taken a bit of criticism for it, hasn't he?
Mm. I think when you look back on it, I worry a little bit. Not worry, but I wonder if Aaron Ramsey could have done more. He gave the ball away in midfield, and you know, he got back into a reasonable position. But I think it was Ashley Young who cut back inside Callum Chambers, and Ramsey was just kind of standing off. And this comes back to things we've spoken about in the past, and the manager obviously has spoken about it, that, you know, to try and stop these crosses coming in, to stop the danger early, so you're not faced with a situation like we were with Gibbs and Fellaini and Szczesny making, you know, whatever mess they made of it. Ramsey just kind of stood there. So I think, you know, it's small little things like that which can make a big difference, because if you look at it, Mertesacker has Van Persie, who's just about to step offside. So Ramsey's marking nobody, really, and he just kind of stood there, hands behind his back, and swung a leg at it rather than make any real effort. Now, maybe that's completely nitpicking the entire situation, but it just felt, it was just one of those goals when it went in. You're looking at it, it was almost like a slow motion kind of thing where the ball deflected off Gibbs into the net. And there just seemed to be a couple of seconds where it felt, I don't know what the right word is. I couldn't quite believe it, but I was waiting for... It just looked so ludicrous that it was like, nah, this can't be real.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, sort of the scene was added to by the fact that, you know, Szczesny was down, Gibbs was down.
Mm.
You know, Arsenal had been knocked out, really, by a singular punch. And without even conceding a single shot on target, they'd managed to be behind.
Yeah, well, that was
incredible.
It's just the most Arsenal thing of all time, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
The opposition haven't had a shot on target, and you're still losing the game.
Absolutely unbelievable, really. But so, I mean, I think against a team of that quality, there's always a chance. You know, someone will put a good cross in. Something might happen. You might concede a goal. I do think that a lot of the issue with this match was the fact that we weren't in a position whereby that didn't hurt us. You know, we should have been ahead comfortably, as we were, you know, in the same against Manchester City earlier this season. We had that great 20 minutes, just didn't do enough with it.
Mm. So then the response from Arsenal seemed to be quite cavalier, in the sense that we really went for it from then on, and the goal went in the 56th minute. Now, we weren't caught until the 85th minute when Rooney got the second. But, you know, we kind of huffed and puffed, and there was an Alexis header, I think, was about the best chance we had. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, we really didn't do an awful lot to trouble the United defence. There's the lorry.
There he is. Taunting us.
Yeah, full of cockroaches.
There was a Cazorla volley, wasn't there, from the edge of the box. But, I mean, he can't score from 6 yards at the moment, so that felt a little bit redundant. We didn't create a massive amount in that spell, and it was inevitable that we would get caught. I remember looking at the pitch and seeing quite how high Per Mertesacker was, and that's a recipe for disaster, isn't it? I mean, if they get a ball in over the top, we're not catching them, and that's exactly what happened.
You made a point on your blog about how, you know, it's very easy to blame the manager, and obviously he's got some of the responsibility, or most of the responsibility, but also the players have to take some responsibility too. But how do we tally that? Like, a guy like Per Mertesacker, who is hugely experienced, I mean, is there just, they're trying too hard to make things happen? They're, you know, kind of losing the run of themselves a bit, that there's this desperation to make sure that we get something from a game that makes them forget the basics to a certain extent.
Maybe. And maybe it's to do with the absence of a clear plan. Maybe because they're less certain of what they're doing. They have less conviction about, you know, the style of play and the way they should be set up, so that it just becomes a question of, you know, individual exertion, as you say, becoming a bit desperate, doing everything they can and making decisions that are perilous. I wasn't able to be at that. Per Mertesacker went and spoke at a synagogue in North London, but I was speaking to someone the other day who was there, and they said they felt it was quite telling when he was asked about tactical preparation and things like that. He kind of clammed up a bit, and they got the sense that he was expressing a sense that the team maybe do feel a little bit unaware of what they should be doing on the pitch. Now that's reportage, that's come by somebody else, but I think looking at them, that doesn't surprise me enormously.
So that comes back to the manager then, for not just managing before the game and picking his team and setting out whatever plan he's got, but also in-game management, that it's not necessarily as good or effective as it should be. Because he said after the game that he didn't realise, or he didn't quite understand, why we had so many players pushed up the pitch. I mean, if he doesn't know why, I mean, I know why. I think we all know why those players were pushed up the pitch, because they were desperate to get a goal. They were desperate not to lose to Manchester United. They're aware of the pressure that's on them, of the expectation. They're aware that the team's not playing well. They're not blind or deaf to what's going on, you know, in the stands and beyond that. So that's the why. The question is how it was allowed to happen to such an extent.
Well, I think that's pretty baffling, isn't it? I mean, what he said was, I don't know why we had nobody at the back at all. You could see straight away that giving a 2-1 in your own half means you will be punished against these players. Yeah, you can. It's weird, isn't it? It's the same against Anderlecht. He, after the game, he had quite a sort of eloquent explanation of how we threw it away. But it was like, well then, you know, why wasn't more done to affect that?
Yeah.
Really, really, really difficult to explain. I mean, you know, I suppose people say, well, what can he do? But the answer is, he can literally stand on the sidelines and tell the fullback, say, to cover, or the defensive midfielder to hold back.
Yeah.
Instead of just watching it unfold. I think anyone in the ground, and probably anyone watching on television, could see the danger of what might happen. I mean, is it a necessary risk? Is that just the situation we were in, that we had to go for it?
I think at some point it becomes a necessary risk. And I don't necessarily have an issue with conceding in the 85th minute. Because, you know, you're at that point of the game where you do have to go for it. You know, you'd be criticised if you weren't going for it. But I think there's a way of going for it without leaving yourself as exposed as we did. Mm. Right? Mm-hmm. I also think that when you concede in the 56th minute, you've got loads of time to get back into a game. Loads of time. Now, I know we were a little bit hampered because we had to change the goalkeeper. And that was an interesting one as well, because I think the decision to make the substitution came from the manager. despite the fact that Chesney appeared willing to carry on. I think Colin Lewin was reporting that, but then told him no. So that was an interesting one. But it robbed us of another attacking substitution. But I think, you know, when it's the 56th minute, you go, okay, we've got a goal down. Let's consolidate. Let's, you know, keep our shape. Let's try and build some momentum and pressure, real momentum and pressure, force United backwards. And with that pressure, I think you have more chance of scoring a goal rather than just going, tally-ho, and everybody going charging forward, because it's done without any real consideration of the effects of that. And I think we saw that Rooney was given offside at one point when he'd timed his run perfectly past Mertesacker. And that could have that could have been a damaging goal well before he scored. Angel of Mary, he could have made it 3-0.
Yeah, definitely.
Should have made it 3-0. You know, so, I mean, yes, there is a point where you have to say, right, we'll go for it, but I think you can do it in a more controlled way. That would be my thinking.
It easily could have been 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And
I don't think that would have. I don't think that would have been reflective of the game or the performance, because you know there were some positives from the way that we played, the way we started. We put real pressure on them. Obviously, they're a bit ramshackle at the back, and that again is what's really frustrating, isn't it? Is that this is the worst United side any of us can ever remember seeing, or certainly in the last 20 years. Defensively, it's a mess. Come on.
Yeah, I know. I mean, before the game, I looked at their lineup, and you know that three centre backs of McNair, Smalling, and who was it? Oh, Blackett.
Yeah.
And you know, it was impossible not to think, well, we've got a chance against these guys, you know. And I guess we, you know, in some respects, we did impose ourselves upon that back three, but we never converted it into anything. And maybe some of the reason for that desperation that we talked about is that this is becoming such a familiar occurrence for these Arsenal players. You know, they see this happen almost week in, week out, where they lose that first goal and then they find themselves with a mountain to climb. It's really, really troubling. And I don't know, I mean, what do you feel about, because there are certain fans out there who are like, well, this was our best performance of the season, there's a lot of positives to be taken. I mean, do you feel any of that positivity yourself?
No, I think it's more worrying that on what is, I think, one of the days when we played, I won't say we played really well, because I think it's relative to how we've played this season. We played quite well in comparison to some of the shite that we played this season.
Yeah.
But that worries me more, that regardless of the fact that we played better than we have done, we still lost the game and still found a way to self-destruct. That worries me, because I think there's a for all the issues of personnel, and you can't make any excuses for the way we're lined up at the back. And I don't see the point in going down that road again. And we all know the deficiencies. I think there is there's a fundamental issue of confidence within the team, and I worry that despite the fact they've played well, they still lost. And I think that will prey on their minds, and I think it becomes more and more of a burden for them, that they're going, oh, cry, you know, we played well, but we still lost. Mm. And as much as winning becomes a habit, losing becomes a habit. And when you're playing well and things are going your way, you know, the Chesney, Gibbs, Valencia thing, you know what happens there is that you get away with it. That Gibbs sticks a leg out and it deflects over the bar or onto the crossbar, or, you know, somebody makes a header. And when things aren't going well, you get the feeling that every little mistake you make is going to be punished. And yeah. I think that is the main problem we have right now, is that these players are absolutely shot in terms of confidence and belief. And it's how then they restore some of that. And how they go on and try and win games. You know, if we were talking about Manchester United, well, if we could win against Manchester United, it would be a nice, you know, a little bit of a step forward in terms of our confidence, and we could take that into Dortmund. And now we're going, right, we've lost against United, but if we can win against Dortmund, then our next game, which is what, West Brom, and then I think we're playing Southampton. You know, you're worrying now about, well, it becomes almost a weekly thing. If we can just do this, if we can just... And we're in a position where we, as fans, obviously are powerless to do anything about it, but we can't... I just can't help but be really concerned that playing well or playing relatively well and losing will be just as damaging to the confidence as playing badly and getting spanked.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And the you know, you say, oh, we can just turn that corner if we get this one win. But we're now like a week away from December. And I just feel like we haven't seen this team click at all, to be honest.
No, once it happened. Yeah. Once this season. And that was Galatasaray. And then, obviously, that went a bit funny because Chesney was sent off. There was that few minutes at Aston Villa, which were great. But that was Aston Villa, and every one of them was doing diarrhea in their own mouth.
And, you know, when you look at the teams we've beaten in the league, I think it's Sunderland, Palace, Villa, Burnley. I think they're all 14th and downwards in the table. Doesn't look great at all.
No,
really.
That tells a story. And we're a team that needs to win, to start winning games and going on a run of games. A run of wins. And it's really difficult to see how we're going to do that with the way things are in terms of, in terms of the overall team and the confidence and lack of it.
Well, I wonder, because Arsene Wenger, one thing he is capable of as a manager is putting together these runs of consecutive wins. You know, like he tends to do it at one point every season.
Yeah.
Have a sort of sustained run of wins. And I wonder if, when you've got a style of play and a system and a philosophy that's so dependent on players taking responsibility and making decisions for themselves, I feel like confidence is more important in that kind of team than it might be in a side where you've got real structural rigour and everyone knows their job absolutely dictated by you.
Yeah.
Because if a player, let's take the example of Chelsea, if a player in the Chelsea team, let's say Azpilicueta, I should have chosen one that's easier to pronounce.
But you did well, though. That's good.
Thank you. Let's say he's feeling a bit down, he's not got confidence. He probably has a detailed plan of exactly how he should be playing that even when he doesn't really trust his own judgment, he can stick to.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like with Arsenal, because they've got that much more freedom, if you don't have that self-confidence, it falls apart. Mm. And the reason you see those sustained runs come together is because when they get some victories behind them, then they have the sort of self-belief to take ownership of their roles on the pitch. But without that, you're in really big trouble.
Yeah, that's a great point, I think. That's a really good point. And it is, let's face it, it's fine margins. It's not like you have to do things radically different to change things. Mm. It is fine margins. It's, you know, when to push up or when to, you know, that one week or that decision that doesn't work, the next week, you know, you make the right decision and it becomes natural. It's almost instinctive.
Yeah, absolutely. But otherwise there's room for doubt.
Yeah.
That creates problems.
Yeah, so the big question is how do we get ourselves onto a run where the players are in a position mentally where they can reach their peak or do play as well as we know that they can or should be able to?
That is the question. And, you know, I think we've seen an answer to it in the past when, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, when Arsenal kind of went back to basics and in order to get themselves into a position where they could play with a bit more freedom, had to play in a more restricted manner.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, we'll see. I just finally was, for this part, Jack Wilshere lucky to stay on the pitch?
I thought so, yeah. I have to say, very, very lucky. I don't know how. I wonder if he was being afforded some of the same protection we've seen given to other England stars down the years, the likes of Alan Shearer, you know, because I can't see how he got away with that. I know it wasn't strictly head-to-head. But,
well, that's good. Only because he couldn't reach.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, what did you think?
At first, I thought it was Fellaini overreacting to something. But, you know, maybe that just kind of sums up where we are in terms of, you know, this squad, that Wilshere made a foul, and it was a foul. And then he took exception to the decision and took exception to Fellaini going, "What are you talking about? That was a foul." That, you know, that's... I don't want to say mental weakness, but what the hell was he thinking?
I mean,
what was he so objecting to there?
I've no idea. I wonder if some of maybe the frustration at that miss played into that, because it was such an awful, you know, thing to do, and he really could have been sent off, and that would have been an earlier turning point in the game. I mean, we all, you know, have all got a lot of affection for Jack, but I think Football 365 said that it was almost like him trying to sum up his Arsenal career in, like, you know, 70 odd minutes before he went off, and I think that's a bit harsh, but we saw, I definitely think we saw some of the worst of Jack Wilshere in that match.
All right, okay. We're going to take a short break. We're going to be back with part two and your questions right after this.
Hello, welcome back to the AskCast Extra. We're going to have a look at some of your cheerful questions now. And this first one comes from Wiendiola. And they ask, do you think Szczesny is a liability, and what chance have we got to get Petr Cech in January?
I don't think he's a liability. I think last season he was, along with Petr Cech, the outstanding goalkeeper in the Premier League. They shared the golden fist, did they not?
I think they did, yeah. They had a lovely old time together.
They did. And this season, obviously, he is struggling. But I think there's also a very direct correlation to be made between the general stability we had defensively last season and Szczesny's form and the clean sheets that he kept, and the defensive shambles that we are this season, and the fact that he hasn't really been playing as well as he can. I think if you were to put any goalkeeper in the world behind the defense and the defense we've had this season, and in a team with the defensive issues that we've had this season, they would struggle. I think they would. That's not to say I think Szczesny's playing as well as he can. I think his own form, much like almost every player in this Arsenal team, in this Arsenal squad this season, is not as good as it can be. He's struggling for form. And really, you could only point to one or two players who have hit the heights that you would expect. So he's out of form, but I still think that he's a very good goalkeeper. He's still young in terms of goalkeepers. He can still improve. But I think, you know, it's not that it's unrealistic to expect him to do more. I can't think of anything really abysmal that he's done that has cost us a game or points. There have been a couple of moments, some bad decisions, but again, I think that comes from playing behind a jittery defense that, you know, perhaps as goalkeeper he's feeling responsible or trying to snuff out danger when maybe he could be a bit more sensible. But, you know, I think the main issue is he's playing behind a defense and a defensive midfield that has been well below par.
I mean, what about the kind of statistical quirk? I mean, I haven't got the numbers in front of me, but it feels like,
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow.
Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/arsblog.
First shot on target is invariably a goal at the moment. Is that something where you have to look at your keeper as compared to, say, De Gea, who made a lot of saves this weekend?
I suppose so, but I guess you also have to look at the chance itself rather than just the statistic, which would make it very biased against the goalkeeper. You have to look at where the shot came from, how the shot came about. Was it a brilliant finish? How much chance did he have to make the save from the first opportunity that we gave the opposition? And normally, the thing is, when we're giving away chances, we're giving away very good chances for strikers. You know, if you look at the headers from close range, shots, and so I think, you have to look at the goalkeeper to a certain extent when you have a statistic like that, but it doesn't tell you anywhere near the full story as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, for me as well, I think he's still the right man to be number one at Arsenal. I think he had a fantastic season last year. Was one of our best three or four players. Maybe didn't get quite as much credit as he deserved. And I think he's struggling. Like, as you said, I think only really Alexis, maybe Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, I would say, are sort of players who I could describe as being in good form at the moment. And, you know, he's one of the majority in that he's not. Mm. As for Petr Cech, I just can't see any reason that Chelsea would ever let him go to us. I don't think it would be even an option, really.
No, and I don't think there's any interest from our part either.
Having signed Ospina in the summer, I think it would be extremely unlikely.
Yeah, I agree. All right, here's a question from Wes Stantone. And he says, we've got three record signings in the squad. Mesut Ozil, Alexis Sanchez, Danny Welbeck. Is having money a problem for Arsene Wenger?
No, I don't think so. I'm not sure why it would be, if I'm honest. What, because it's spent poorly? Is that the implication?
No, but because maybe there's an expectation that comes with money, or that he is more comfortable operating within a certain budget or within a certain budgetary sphere of player, that he's finding it difficult to... I mean, he's found it very difficult to get the best out of one of the best playmakers in the world.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing is, the reason for which it could become a problem for him is because I think it takes away a bit of an excuse. And I think I've said that before, but for a long time, criticism of Arsene Wenger had to be tempered by the fact that he didn't have vast budgets, you know, at his disposal. But having spent that kind of money on those kinds of players, that, you know, caveat is removed.
Mm.
So I think his competence comes more glaringly into the spotlight. But I would say, while the jury may be out on Ozil, Alexis, for example, looks like an excellent signing. I don't think that money has been spent poorly. And I don't think anyone really would contest that. I think that, you know, they all seemed like sensible signings at the times they were made. I think that actually they'll make a decent contribution this season, that trio. But I think that where it does become a problem is because it casts more light on other areas. You know, you can't hide behind that thing of not having money anymore.
Mm.
So in that respect, I think that could be an issue. I mean, do you have a point of view on this?
No, I mean, I think we've said it before. The issue, I don't think this summer, the issue wasn't the money we spent, it was the money we didn't spend. You know, that I don't have any issues with any of the signings. I think they've all been good signings. Ospina, maybe... You know, We haven't seen enough of him, really. But on the face of it, on paper, an experienced international goalkeeper who was outstanding in the World Cup coming in to put some pressure on your number one keeper, it's a good idea. Chambers, fantastic young player. Debushi, very solid. Obviously, unfortunate that he got injured. Alexis is great. Welbeck, I think, is going to be a very useful squad player. Who else was there?
I'm not sure.
Was there one more?
Don't know. Lost
I don't
track.
Know. Yeah, I kind of lost. I think that was it. But the issue, of course, is where we didn't spend the money. And that's the defence again. But
is there a problem as well that it raises expectations? You know,
that's exactly it, yeah.
You spend £80 million. I think people are a bit disingenuous sometimes. They say, oh, Liverpool, you spent £100 million. And they said the same as Spurs last season. But the truth is that actually they didn't spend anything like that net because they lost, in both cases, an extraordinary player who really helped to get them to those heights. You know, we spent that. We only took in, you know, what we got for Vermaelen, say. We spent an enormous amount of money net and we haven't made progress. And I think that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think the expectation wasn't just based on what we did in the summer. It was what we did last season. That if the title challenge fell away in the end, people were encouraged by the fact that we were top of the table for so long and that we got the trophy monkey off our backs. And that is supposed to have been the kind of thing that would help us progress and continue to make progress. And instead, what we've done is, it looks like we've gone backwards. So that, I think, is part of the frustration.
I think, yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, we could go on about this for a long time, but I think that the problems we're having now do stem back to about midway through last season, when, having established ourselves at the top of the table, playing quite a tight, conservative almost brand of football, it felt like there was a desire to take the shackles off. And that led to some pretty humbling defeats against some of the big teams. And in some respects, I don't think our confidence ever recovered from that.
I would tend to agree. I'd agree. All right, let's have another one.
Another one. Okay, let's have this one. This is from Steve Moore, 4116. And he asks, instead of playing Jack and Aaron in the same side, he's got the nuclear approach here, should they both be dropped in favour of Flam Teta?
It's difficult because you need to find some kind of balance in midfield. Mm-hmm. Between the defensive side of things, which is obviously an issue, but I don't know. It's horrible kind of a choice in a way, and that's not to be dismissive of the players in question, but I don't think Ramsey and Wilshere have yet figured out how to play together. No. I don't think the manager has figured out how to get them both in his team, although he seems quite determined to do it. But at the same time, I don't know that Arteta and Flamini works particularly well. But this could tie in with another question that I have here from Jane Camadish at JCav90. And she asks, after prior crisis in March 13, we went back to basics. Defenders defended deep and midfielders sat. Why don't we do it now? Which is, I think, something we've touched on before. But maybe then Flamini and Arteta could provide that defensive midfield shield properly. I don't know. I just don't think any of the solutions are ideal. The midfield balance has been wrong. I think, you know, I think if everyone's on form, I think the best bet for us is to play Arteta with Ramsey just a little bit ahead of him. So almost like two at the base of the midfield with a Cazorla, with an Ozil in the number 10 position. I think that's the best solution when the players are in form and with everybody fit. But obviously Ramsey's not in form at all.
No.
I thought Arteta was quite good against United. I thought he defended pretty well, snuffed out Van Persie a couple of times. He was, you know, always there. He's never going to be the dynamic midfield enforcer that people want, but at the moment he is the best option that we have in that position.
I thought he might have been our best player, actually, against United.
The issue is the players in front of him. I thought it was Ramsey and Wilshere that were more the problem in midfield. Does Flamini bring anything that Ramsey or Wilshere don't? I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, what I do know is that they played together at Sunderland, kept a clean sheet. Everyone was very surprised when they started together at home to Burnley, kept a clean sheet. Now, obviously, I know the opposition is not of great quality. And Flamini's nowhere near the player that Ramsey is or that Wilshere is. But I just wonder if, yeah, there might be something in it. And just in terms of, I think what Jane Cavendish says is right. I think we need to go back to basics to an extent. And it seems to me that an out-of-form Aaron Ramsey, in some respects, it feels like he does as much harm as good. We've talked about it before, but when he gets it wrong, he gets it really wrong. And he doesn't seem to be offering too much defensively at present, which is strange because he's perfectly capable of it. But it's that question of form again. I don't know. I mean, I feel like there is a midfielder missing, and we've talked about that for a long time. But I feel like, you know, when you're trying to make these combinations work, invariably you sort of think, right, well, you might want to go with two very sort of solid deep line midfielders. So you'd go with Arteta and one other, and Flamini becomes the default choice, but he's not necessarily the player that any of us would choose, given more freedom.
So, in short, we don't know.
We don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me to see it in some forthcoming away games, I have to say.
What about against Dortmund on Wednesday? Is that a game where our approach has got to be more cautious, given that our cavalier approach cost us against Manchester United? Do we then have to take stock and say, okay, I know we're at home, I know it's a game we've got to get something from, but should it be a first do not lose approach?
Possibly. I think, you know, our best performance in the early period of last season came against Napoli. And Mikel Arteta and Mathieu Flamini both started in that game in the Champions League.
Yeah.
Aaron Ramsey, I think, played wide right. And that might be an option for us. And I do think he'll be worried about Dortmund after seeing what happened in the reverse fixture. You know, it's not a game they're desperate to win, but they've got such quality going forward that even without Marco Reus, who fortunately will be injured, that I think it's something he'll consider. The problem is that if, in theory, you tell Aaron Ramsey to sit in deep alongside Mikel Arteta, that should be something that he's able to do. But for whatever reason, it doesn't seem to be providing us with the security that you'd expect.
I mean, he did it all right for the first 55 minutes against United. He wasn't spectacular by any means and didn't do an awful lot offensively. But, you know, we were pretty solid until that point. So maybe that's the solution. And you know, does the manager have any choice but to play the players until they can find some form, given that we don't have much in the way of options? What's the option there in midfield? Play Oxlade-Chamberlain, perhaps?
Maybe. I mean, the main option's Flamini, and he's come in for a lot of criticism this season for performing really badly. Yeah. So it's not a great state of affairs.
Okay, this is a question, seeing as we've touched on Dortmund. It comes from Roger Barra, at Roger Barra. And he says, we're 2 points behind fourth. Dortmund are in the relegation zone, so why don't their fans behave like ours? He says, why don't their fans behave abominably, which I think is a bit harsh on our fans. But obviously the manager is taking a lot of criticism, but Jurgen Klopp, maybe not so much criticism. So there's a question.
I don't know, because I don't know really. I'm not a member of any Dortmund forums. I don't follow a load of Dortmund fans. So, you know, as far as I know, there might be some discontent. But you're right, from the outside, it doesn't necessarily seem so. Maybe they're happier. Maybe they feel more enfranchised, to be honest. I think that's quite a big thing about German football.
More enfranchised. That's good. I never heard somebody being called enfranchised before. Normally you can be disenfranchised, but enfranchised.
There you go.
Yeah, I like it.
I don't know if it's a word, but I think, you know, there's that. Maybe they feel, I mean, this is quite highfalutin stuff. I don't know if there's anything in this at all. I'm just trying to make up an answer to a question I don't really know the answer to. But maybe there is a sense at which they feel, Yeah, I don't know. Their connection with their club is slightly different from the one that we feel that we currently have with our own. I don't know.
Could it be...
enables them to be more satisfied.
Could it be that this is probably the first real dip under Jurgen Klopp, whereas Arsenal's issues have been ongoing for quite a number of years, and there have been changes in the playing personnel, so the only common denominator now is Arsene Wenger. Could that be it?
Possibly. Possibly. And speaking to people who've watched Dortmund regularly, what they've said to me is that they feel a little bit like this run has been something of an anomaly, and that actually they have been quite unfortunate along the way. The other thing to consider is obviously that they lost Robert Lewandowski this summer and have lost major stars year in, year out. So there, whereas we're not in a position where that's happened the last couple of years, we don't have that, you know, excuse to offer.
Yeah.
I think there are various things. I think as well that the issue with our own manager is that I think Tim Stillman wrote a column about this for Arseblog, where I think we're, as a fan base, just a little bit maybe tired of some of these things. You know, we've had this manager in place for such a long time, and I wouldn't go as far as saying familiarity breeds contempt, but it certainly can increase levels of friction over time. And I think that there is a frustration at seeing things come round again and again. And I think in that respect, the length of a reign can, you know, be something that produces a little bit of edge.
Sure.
I mean, even Sir Alex Ferguson, I know Manchester United fans who, even though they continued to be successful, were quite frustrated with some of his decision-making by the end of his tenure, which, you know, might seem crazy given that they were still winning leagues and cups. But I think that it's just that familiarity and that slight grating that can occur.
Yeah, it did happen, didn't it, when they went that, 3 years without winning the title?
I think they went 3 years, yeah.
And certainly I remember there were United fans who were saying, that's it. You know, it's done. He's done. He's been there too long. He can't change. And he did, in fairness to him, and won titles again. But I think, yeah, it could be to do with the length of time that Arsene Wenger has been in charge, certainly.
It'll be interesting. I mean, you know, Klopp is a lot of people's kind of anointed potential successor, isn't he?
Yeah.
He seems to be a name that crops up a lot. So to see these two sides play on Wednesday, it's interesting timing, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And he does at the moment seem like the outstanding and obvious candidate. But of course, Arsene Wenger has a 3-year deal. So, mm-hmm. So there you go. Okay, look, another question.
Okay, one comes from Michael Hatcher. He's at Tal Rose. And he asks, would three at the back make us more solid? Chambers, Mertesacker and Monreal with Gibbs and Bellerin as your wing-backs?
No. No. No, because then what you're doing is you're still playing... Who's going to sweep there? Because you need somebody to sweep. So Mertesacker, I guess, would be your sweeper in a three-man central defence.
Right.
Monreal, still out of position at centre-half. Bellerin, 19. I don't think changing the defensive formation is the answer, really.
We've barely got two centre-backs.
What happens if one of those centre-halves gets an injury? You've made a decision to change formation, to change the system of the team, which is not always easy to do. You then have to implement that, the changes that it has on the midfield, on the way you attack, etc., etc. I just don't see that as the right way to go. I think when we get Koscielny and Debuchy back, and hopefully buy a defender in January, I think we'll be more solid. The issue for me is getting to January, because we've got how many games between now and then? Probably 9 or 10 before the window opens. Hang on, let me just have a look here. So we've got, okay, including tomorrow, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 games before the transfer window opens. Then we've got a game on January the 1st, which is not going to be, you're not going to have a signing in place for that. Then there's one on the weekend of January 3rd, which is the third round of the FA Cup. You're unlikely to have anything done before that. And then the window that you've got then is before we play Stoke at home on Sunday the 11th. So you've got from that Saturday to the Sunday, hopefully to, you know, bring people in and have them integrated and ready into the team. Because I think we go Stoke at home, then Manchester City away. So you'd want to have your new players in place before you're going to Manchester City, right?
Yeah.
So it's getting to the point where we can make those signings still in good shape. That's the real issue, I think. So, and you know, there's a worry, I think, as well, that when you're playing that many games in a row, you know, the manager can shift his midfield around a little bit. He's got Theo Walcott and Olivier Giroud coming back now. He can shift things around a little bit up front. He's got Lukas Podolski complaining that he's, you know, not a clown. He's there as well if he wants to change things around up front. There are options, but we don't have any options at the back. And I worry that playing that many games, like it's Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, where it's Stoke, Galatasaray, Newcastle. Then we've got Liverpool. We've got Newcastle, then Liverpool. The 21st is Liverpool, 26th Queen's Park Rangers, 28th West Ham. You're asking those defenders to play that many games. Maybe Koscielny and Debuchy will be back then to give us a bit of rest. But it's going to be a tough job keeping those players fit. Because if we get any more defensive injuries, fuck, what do we do? Seriously, what do you do? You're looking at Flamini as a fullback, something like that, right? Or you're delving deep into the youth and hoping that they can cope for a game or two.
I think someone said the other day that Isaac Hayden might be injured.
He is, yeah. He's out for a few weeks. He did. He posted a picture on Twitter. You know, he got promoted to the first team squad, then posted a picture on Twitter of him in one of those protective boots.
Of course. Probably got his promotion.
Yeah.
Probably what sealed the deal. They were like, he has got the stuff.
Yeah.
On the three at the back thing, I just think if there are any doubts over the coaching of the side and their ability to kind of, you know, set up a defence and put them in the correct positions. I just think, why would you complicate that by trying to introduce a new system? At least there's a degree of familiarity with 4-4-2 to build upon.
Yeah.
Or 4-5-1, whatever it is. So I think it's going to be that for a while at least.
All right. Is it my question? No,
I think so.
It's my question. I think we're kind of towards the end of this one.
Okay.
To be honest. Do you have another one or...?
I've got loads of questions, mate.
Loads.
Don't you worry about that. No, but I mean, you know, if your question didn't make it on, it's just misfortune. It's time. How long can a podcast be, ultimately?
Exactly, and how many times can we talk about things?
Yeah.
Things.
As we said, we've got a lot of these to do.
We do. Between now and the days of death.
Summer 2017.
Okay, I got one final one.
Okay.
Seeing as there weren't too many of these questions this week and everyone was quite serious, what would you rather? Be stuck in a room where you have to listen to that Taylor Swift song every day for 3 hours, nonstop, on repeat, the whole sort of Guantanamo thing going on there.
Okay.
Or sleep on a pillow which is not made of duck feathers or foam, but cockroaches. So a cockroach pillow or the Taylor Swift song every day for three hours.
Right. The cockroach pillow?
Yeah. They're alive.
Are they inside a pillowcase?
They are, of course, yeah.
So they're moving?
They are moving, but it's stitched up because otherwise they'd just escape and it would be a useless pillow.
It's sealed.
It is absolutely sealed. It's sewn up and it's full of wriggling cockroaches.
Okay. But if I take that option, will I ever hear the Taylor Swift song again?
Never.
Only reverberating inside my skull. Will it rid me of the earworm?
I can't make that promise.
That might have sealed it. I would say, and when I'm listening to the Taylor Swift song Forever,
I would say for a period of 6 months for both of them.
I'm trapped in a room.
Yeah. No, but you know, it's easy to say, oh, I could put up with that for a week. But let's say it's either 6 months of Cockroach Pillow or 6 months of 3 hours of Taylor Swift.
Oh, it's 3 hours a day.
3 hours a day for 6 months. And you never know what hours they're going to be. They could wake you up in the middle of the night and take you and play that song at you, or it could be first thing in the morning.
I think... I mean, look, has anyone tried the cockroach pillow? It might have medical benefits that we're unaware of. Cockroaches smell, though, I've learned recently.
Do they?
Yeah, they have like a scent. A quite distinctive smell.
It's probably from all the goo they splurge out.
Yeah, I think so. Look, I think I'm going to regret this possibly, but I'm going to go for the cockroach pillow.
Yeah?
I just think that the Taylor Swift thing, I mean, what if they were waking you up in the middle of the night? That would disturb your sleep anyway.
Yeah.
Whereas at least with the cockroaches, I mean, it might be comfy. It could be like a bean bag.
In the end, it probably would be, because they would die in there, surely. Unless you got fresh cockroaches inserted into the pillow every day to plump it up.
They can survive anything, though, cockroaches, can't they? I mean,
apart from being squashed. Yeah. They're not very good at surviving that, trust me.
Yeah?
Yeah, when we moved to Spain, the first apartment we had when we were waiting to get our house had a little bit of a cockroach problem, and one of our cats was quite a hefty cat. Smithers was the name of the cat.
Right.
We called it Smithers when we thought it was a boy, but then turned out to be a girl. We knew it was a girl when it had kittens. But the cockroaches would come up into the bath, and Smithers would sit in the bath and just squash them.
With her paws?
With her paws. You know, she'd trap it and then just kind of sit on it, and then there would just be like squash cockroach everywhere. So they're not good at surviving squashing.
That's weird. It's like a sort of cat equivalent of that fairground thing where you have to hit things with hammers.
Mm.
Well, yeah, cockroach pillow. Sign me up.
Yeah?
Why not?
All right. Fair enough. I think I go Taylor Swift.
I mean, at the end of the day, if you like the song, then that's not that bad.
It's not so much that I like it. It's that the cockroach thing would just... Nah, I couldn't... The scrunching around, you know, when you're lying...
The scuttling.
Yeah, the scuttling, and when you're lying there trying to get to sleep, and all you can hear is like... That would be too much for me, so I'd rather Taylor Swift.
We'll agree to disagree.
Hey, it's about time we found something we disagreed on. All right, well, look, let's keep fingers crossed for Dortmund on Wednesday. We'll be back next Monday to discuss the whatever happens against West Brom.
Sobering defeat to West Brom.
Until then, folks, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.